What's the 411? You're tuned in to 411 Teen. 411 Teen is a weekly program for teens and other interested folks. 411 Teen provides a forum to examine and discuss various issues and events that confront, intersect, and sometimes interrupt our daily lives. It takes a quick glance to evaluate someone you meet for the first time. 7 seconds. Then an opinion is formed based on their perception of your appearance, body language, demeanor, mannerisms, and attire. This opinion is the first impression. Stereotypes reflect ideas that groups of people hold about others that are different from them. They are ideas held about the members of a particular group based primarily on their membership of that group. I'm Dr. Liz Hollifield. Joining me here at the roundtable, I'd like to welcome all students from Rickards High School International Baccalaureate Program. They are all in the 11th grade. I'm welcoming Shaquanda Simmons. She is into photography and music. Kayura Katam. She is into soccer and dancing. Karina White. Dancing, theater, and music production. Puneet.
Sachdeva.
Welcome to 411 Team.
Hi, glad to be here.
Science is your thing. You like to do science. You're into that. And everybody's into dancing. What is this? Okay. Ewan Nicholson, he is into rock climbing and writing. And not dancing?
No, I'm not into dancing. No.
Well, welcome all of you to 411 Team. Appreciate you coming to share your opinions. How important are first impressions to you? Do they matter?
Well, first impressions matter a lot to me. Growing up, I was introduced into Boy Scouts at a young age, and you know, they sort of taught us this moral code, the Scout Law, if anyone's familiar with it. And so that sort of led me to judge a lot of people by their character. You know, they first meet them. Sometimes if they brush me off right away or they say something rude to me, you know, in my mind, I'm subconsciously already forming an opinion. This person might be kind of mean. Yeah, you know, but otherwise, if someone meets me and shakes my hand, I'm already thinking happy thoughts about them.
Okay. So first impressions are significant. So it really kind of sounds like it sets the framework for the future.
It really does.
And people are nodding their heads, but we'll get to you because they can't see you. Okay.
Well, personally, back in the day, like middle school and all, first impressions, I would go by them and all, but I found that often I was wrong, and I'm not sure if that reflected my ability to judge people or my or how important first impressions are. But then about a year ago, I went through an experience of I was at a competition, and I was talking to this one guy who was really good in math and all, and he would win a lot of awards. And at first, he seemed very abrupt and dismissive, and I didn't like him too much, and I didn't want to talk to him. But I did end up talking to him a little bit through Facebook and Gmail, and now he's actually one of my best friends. So I've kind of learned that don't go by a first impression necessarily. Try to pursue a relationship regardless.
A lot of people say don't judge a book by its cover, but I think that they really can't help that because first glances are what make people approach you first. And a lot of people give off false impressions, and I've had a lot of those experiences in my life because they might seem really cheerful and happy and they make you want to approach them first, but then they're actually really emotionally going through some problems, and that just makes you want to learn them more.
Okay.
Concerning the question, how important are first impressions? I feel like they're important, but that's only to a certain extent because you may not talk to someone because of how they look, but eventually, like Puneet said, you can change your opinion on that person because I've also found myself asking the question with some of my friends now, why haven't I talked to you before, like freshman year and all this? Mm-hmm. Why haven't we talked? And it's not really because you don't like that person or you didn't like that person. You just didn't know them. Mm-hmm. So basically, first impressions are not really the most important thing, but it's important rather how you portray yourself to others.
Would you venture to say that first impressions may be important? It just depends on the environment. For example, if you're going to get a job, that first impression is going to be important. If you're interacting with your peers and, like you're talking about, friends, maybe first impressions are not as important. So, I mean, would you all agree that the setting has something to do with it?
Yeah. I'd certainly say so, yeah.
I would as well, but then again, we don't have as much experience in the professional world, mm-hmm. so mm-hmm. We never know.
But, well, just think. I mean, if you're going to get a job, that's going to be, they're going to interact with you right then and there. Yeah. That's going to be their first impression. So whether you've had experience or not, that's going to take, I mean, if that's the only impression they have, I would think that that would be significant.
Of course. Mm-hmm. Most job interviews are solely based on first impressions.
A lot of them, indeed. That's why I brought that up when you were saying, I don't think about first impressions. What about the maturity? And I raise this, that may have evolved in you. Because, for example, both Shaquanda and Puneet, you said something about, you know, how maybe you found out later that the person was not what you thought they were, okay? Or maybe you didn't interact with someone at a lower grade level. Maybe in middle school you were not as involved, and you find out, wow, I should have. I guess what I'm asking is, do you think that your maturity has influenced the role that first impressions play?
Absolutely.
I think more of reality influencing it. When you're mm-hmm. younger, and I suppose this does go with maturity, it's like you don't tend to look deeper into people and you think that they're your best friends mm-hmm. and all. But then later you realize maybe that they don't treat you well and you don't want to be friends with them as much. And on the other side of that, maybe you realize this person wasn't mean at all. It was just, It's a real world thing. They can be genuinely interesting and nice people. So it can go either way for sure.
Okay.
Yeah. I feel like what Shaquanda said earlier, you know how people, when they first go to high school and they just talk to this one group of students for their whole 4 years of high school or college. Mm-hmm. But I think that's not very mature of them. I think that all depends on the person itself, because it depends on if the person is an introvert or an extrovert.
You need to spread yourself out there. You shouldn't just maintain the mm-hmm. same group of people. You need to meet new people.
Yeah, you feel obligated to stick to one group throughout your whole 4 years of college, because 4 years of high school, because that's what mm-hmm. you were in, that you were mm-hmm. in that group in middle school and maybe even elementary school.
But that's just the point. People who are naturally shy, I guess, they don't really have a chance to explain themselves to others. They may come across as being, you know, arrogant, not wanting to talk to anyone but certain people. Mm-hmm. But that's not actually how they are.
Mm-hmm. Well, when we look at first impressions, what are the kinds of things that you consider and that you evaluate when you look at someone? What are the things that matter to you?
What matters a lot to me when I first meet someone, you know, I'll always introduce myself, especially if it's like a friend saying, oh, meet my buddy Rick. You know, I'll be like, hey, Rick. mm-hmm. And if Rick smiles back at me and is like, hey, Ewan, what's up? I'm gonna immediately have a good first impression on Rick. But if I were to meet him, say, and he were to look at me and kind of like shake his head and then not even decide to talk to me, you know, that would already give me a first impression. So I guess what I look for a lot is body language with the smiles and stuff. Mm-hmm. And that's not even really a conscious thing. It just kind of happens mm-hmm. in my mind. I just interpret these different motions of their head and mouth as just whether they like me or not already.
Yeah, and I don't even mean to imply that you are consciously, I'm going to look at your hair. I'm going to look at your, I mean, because I don't think that we consciously do that. What do you think, Karina? When you look at someone, when you first saw me, You've never seen me before. What are the kinds of things that you look at? What are the things that you consider in forming a first impression? How they're dressed, how they walk. I mean, those are the kinds of things I'm talking about.
Well, I don't really necessarily judge people on the first couple of seconds. I actually wait till they're speaking to actually, you know, hear, you know, if it's valid or not. So
okay. Not. So what is it about their voice that's
Well, I mean, first the tone, I would say, mm-hmm. will, you know, like if it's, you know, attention demanding or anything like that, or you know, like the words, the choice of words they use.
Exactly. So. Exactly. Those are all valid points, and they're very valuable. What about, does eye contact matter to you?
Oh,
I mean,
yes.
if you are looking at someone and they're looking every place else but at you, or looking down at the ground or checking their watch, what does that say to you?
That just says, okay, let me stop talking to you because I'm obviously not interested, you know? Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, with the whole eye contact issue, I can kind of relate to that because it is kind of hard to make eye contact. It is very nerve-wracking, and it's a skill like that takes a while to develop if you're not naturally, like, it doesn't naturally come easily to you. But also, the whole eye contact thing is, I mean, if they're just looking at the walls and looking around, and that just may be them being nervous. But if they're looking, like you said, at their watch or at their phone, or immediately looking at someone else, then that gives the sign that, yeah, this person is a bit rude and mm-hmm. dismissive.
And mm-hmm. he's right. Eye contact, it shows the level of confidence that one has. And I think that's really attractive. And in like a formal conference or something, I also look at how well they're groomed, or maybe their body odor, because that actually mm-hmm. reflects a lot about how they take care of themselves and how much they care.
Good points. Very valid points. Anything else you want to add?
Or particularly like what they care about the most, because I've like met some people, you know, that, you know, they talk really nice, they have, you know, good grades, but, like, when it comes down to, like, hygiene, it's not all that bad.
Mm-hmm. And those are all valid points. You're tuned in to 411 Teen, and this hour I'm talking with Rickards High School International Baccalaureate students, and we are looking at first impressions and stereotypes. We're going to take a brief break. If you're just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen. We're having a really good, thorough discussion on first impressions, how significant they are. What are the variables that you look at in looking at first impressions? And something I wanted to add that I think would be relevant to both of your comments, because what role does culture play? We were talking about eye contact, okay? And depending on the culture that you're from, your culture may not encourage you to make direct eye contact, okay? So if we judge individuals by their eye contact, and I'm not saying it's not good, but we have to take into consideration, you know, some cultures, cleanliness, I mean, and that's not to say they aren't clean, taking showers and smelling good is not that important, you know? I mean, it depends on your culture. Yeah. I mean, you know, there are places where people don't take showers 2 and 3 times a day like we do here in the United States. And Madison Avenue and all their perfumes and colognes and all that doesn't matter. Because if everybody smells the same way, you don't smell, right?
It's true.
I mean, really, when you think about it. So, you know, and I just thought you all raised some really valid points, and I just want to kind of piggyback on that and look at, just let's even expound a little bit more. What role does culture play when we are forming first impressions about someone?
Well, like you were saying with the eye contact, in some cultures, looking someone in the eye is considered disrespectful,
right,
as opposed to respectful like mm-hmm. it is in America. And so, I mean, shaking someone's hand may not necessarily be prominent in other culture or direct contact in any way. So,
indeed.
In terms of culture, I would say that one thing is being familiar with other cultures in itself is the main issue, because a lot of people aren't. So they judge simply based on their culture because their culture is the most prominent thing in their lives. So that could, that culture in a sense just shapes your way you take first impressions from other people.
Very valid point and very well said. Yes. What other things do we look at? We said, what about nonverbal communication? And Karina, I think you said something about that or alluded to it. But let's look at not talking to the person at all, not interacting, you know, verbally with them at all. What other things do you look at?
In populated countries like China and India, there's if the country is more populated, then the distance between you and the person you're talking to is less. And if they come over here into America, where it's more where there's more space and less people, there's less body. There's mm-hmm. less distance between you and the person talking. And I feel like that's also a cultural difference. And someone can judge you based on that too. How close you are coming on to them and stuff.
That's true. They're like invading their personal right. space, so to speak. Yeah. You know, they'll mm-hmm. see it as that. Any other comments? Yes.
Another big cultural thing I noticed, especially in America, I'm noticing this a lot, is a lot of people dress, you know, their way they dress. And I don't mean mm-hmm. like, you know, ceremonial dress. I mean like American youths who wear skimpy clothes, stuff like that. Whenever I see someone dressed like that, you know, my first thought is, I don't know if this person is super intelligent, because putting your body out there like that just seems sort of, I'm not sure what the word is. It seems sort of, it just makes me think that cool. they're lacking in some intelligence.
Yeah. The wrong advertisement.
Exactly. Like they're advertising their body in a way that's just not, you know, it's not polite. That's the word. Yeah. It's kind of impolite.
I was actually going to bring up that topic of the way someone dresses in American culture, because in the IB program, personally, I've seen many different types of dressing, yes. like uh-huh. a lot of them. And basically, if I would have formed my opinion based only on the way these people dress, I'm like, you should not be in IB right now. Like, that's why a lot of the people at school, certain people who are in the IB program, they don't think they are in the program because of the way they dress, hairstyles, and other things. Like,
I think it's more so of the fact that they aren't aware that some of us are, like, super diverse. Like, we aren't just, you know, a part of just this one group. We associate with many other ethics and
That's
different cultures.
And there's one obvious thing that none of you have raised the issue with, and that's race. Because regardless of whether we talk about it or not, that says something.
It really
you know,
does.
You see somebody and their skin is of whatever the color it is, okay? You form an opinion. It might not be a negative opinion, but you still form an opinion about that. Yeah, because that's what I was saying. It's not always about being conscious of it. But you form an opinion. What had you anticipated? What did you expect that person to look like? Okay? The color of their skin sends a message. And that's something that's glaringly out there. You cannot, you know, can't change that.
No.
Yeah, and another thing with race is that you feel the need to identify with people of the similar race as well.
True.
And you feel, like, more comfortable around them when that doesn't necessarily need to be true.
Mm-hmm. And it's just because you feel that connection through race, and that's not – well, it's like, does everybody stand – do all white folks feel the same way? Do all black folks feel the same way? Does everybody agree with Al Sharpton? I mean, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, everybody agree with Rick Scott, you know? Okay. I mean, but you know what exactly what I'm talking about.
Coming back to mm-hmm. Karina, what Karina was talking about, how they think, you know, since you're this race or sort of you dress this way, that you're only mm-hmm. one culture.
Right.
And that's true with a lot of people. Like, there's all sorts of different countries of origin that a single race can come from. Mm-hmm. Like me, for example, I'm white, and I feel like there's this sort of judgment that just because I'm white, you know, I'm just white, you know, I'm just an American dude. But But actually, I kind of identify as Scottish, you know. That's my family on my dad's side, and I identify a lot with them. And things like the Scottish referendum have huge political significance to me. And it's just kind of interesting that people assume things based on just the color of your skin.
So you're kind of saying, like, the color of your skin, the fact that we identify by color and not, like, the original origin of your culture kind of influences it, too. You say,
it does.
You say you're white, and we think white, but you identify as Scottish.
I mean, that it's sort of, yeah. I mean, a lot of Scottish people are white, but, you know.
But not necessarily interchangeable in your
record.
Adding on to that, when we're talking about racially mixed people, society tries to define race even when genetics can't. And even society
Touché.
But even society has a hard time categorizing racially mixed people.
Exactly.
Very true.
Yeah. I mean, but I think that kind of tells you and makes you look at, you know, just the role of race and society. Mm-hmm. And it's something that we tend to tiptoe around. You know, we talked about, we look at this and we look at that, and nonverbal communication. And the one thing is apparent, even sitting here at this table, we got all different colors and shapes. And that, you know what I mean?
Shapes.
Well, you know, I mean sizes. And what, you know what I'm trying to say. You know, so that's one thing nobody talked about. Like, until I brought it up.
It's kind of a sensitive topic, I suppose.
Yeah. And it's also come to the point where even with darker skin tones, you know, most of us are considered black either way. But people will now be like, I'm not black. I'm Haitian. I'm not black.
Exactly.
I'm Jamaican. I'm not black. Instead of just, you know, falling into the natural category of it.
Exactly.
And that I feel like it's kind of like calling someone just black or calling someone just white or calling someone just Asian is almost an insult because it's saying that, you're just one of, you know, this group. When in reality, you know, with Asia, for example, there's Vietnam, there's Japan, there's China. There's so many different countries that you could be from, each one with a very different cultural landscape.
And, I mean, not even that. You might not necessarily even be from one of the stereotypical countries. I mean, there's white people that are born and raised in Africa.
Exactly.
And so you never know that, but because we just look at the surface.
Exactly.
Yeah, when someone says, you're Asian, they say, you must be from either China, Japan, or Korea. And there's a lot more countries in Asia. Korea, Japan, and China. There's, like, India, there's Laos, there's Vietnam, there's Myanmar, there's Philippines.
There's a lot.
Right.
Yeah, there's a lot.
Right. Well, that leads right into, you know, when talking about stereotypes, okay? When I say stereotype, what comes to mind? What do we mean by stereotype?
Well, there's an obvious one in American history and really just countrywide history. There's always historically been this discrimination against African Americans or black people. And, you know, the civil rights movement and a long, long time ago, antebellum period, there's slavery. And just these racial...
Is it over?
Well, that's a whole other debate.
But,
there's this whole racial, you know, bias that comes from these past events. And generally, a stereotype, like, for an example, black people commit more crimes. That's a common one. But that has its only basis... is on a small group of people that have, in fact, committed those crimes. But what that could be said the same about any other race, you know?
And right.
It's just a stereotype that happened to crop up somehow through popular...
Well, it cropped up through, let's call it like it is now, classism and racism and discrimination. That's where it cropped up from.
Exactly.
We know where it came from. And that's what perpetuates it. Ignorance, okay? And fear. And that's what perpetuates all of them, whether it's about black people or Asian or white or whomever, because there's stereotypes associated with every group, you know, negative and positive stereotypes. I mean, everybody basically is guilty of stereotyping. You know, I had students who were here from Sale, because Sale's one of the schools that I work with also, and automatically, when you say stale, isn't there a stereotype?
There is. There definitely is.
Right. And that's just what we were talking about. And to me, they were just Sale students. But then when they started pointing out that, you know, if you say you go to Sale, then you get this response and people think this goes on, that's a stereotype.
There was also there is also a stereotype with Rickards because even mentioning the name is like a, whoa, you go to Rickards. But we were talking about in my philosophy class recently how if you say I'm in the IB program at Rickards, it's a whole different perspective than just I attend Rickards.
When you tell me in the IB program, they say something like, oh, that makes sense. Okay. You're like, why does it make sense?
And, right. Yeah, and then one thing about Rickards and the stereotype is a lot of that has to do with, in a way, the political aspect of it. When something bad happens at Rickards,
it's like
the media jumps on when something bad happens at other schools, they like Lincoln or Childs, they cover it up. The PTA is complete
control.
It's
right back to what we were talking about. I mean, the real deal is this discrimination.
Yeah.
Rickards is the school in the hood. Okay,
it is.
I mean, come on, let's call it like it is. Yeah. Rickards has this rap. So if Rickards has anything, like you were saying, Pony, if Rickards has a problem, it's blown up.
Yeah.
In the newspaper. But they can have the same problem. They have just as many fights and God beat. Come on, you know?
And Lincoln, too.
And Leon and Lincoln.
Even Childs.
Even Childs. Right.
I mean, I love Rickards. Anytime someone brings up the idea of it being better at all, or a parent of a child at Fairview or Swift Creek says that I'm not sure, it doesn't seem safe. It's like, it may not seem safe, but then again, any other high school is going to be the exact same case. You just don't know because it's covered up, and in a way, you're worse off in that situation. Rickards is not that bad. I love the teachers, the classes, and the people there.
Before I came to Rickards, I actually rode the bus with Monford as like a shuttle bus, and it was in the morning. So I used to hear a lot of rumors. Like, it was pretty terrible, and it was really crazy, too. And I would be stupid and kind of believe them sometimes. And then when I came to Rickards, it was like, what? There's nothing bad at all.
Yeah. You haven't been mugged.
Yeah, right.
I know my daughters used to always say, well, we go to Rickards, we haven't been mugged, we haven't been beat up, you know, all is well, nobody's been shot today. You know, But what we're talking about are attitudes or ideas and opinions that are formed about people or a group of people or about things or a location. And as we look at this, where are these attitudes? Where are these opinions? Where do they come from?
Yeah, I was going to say, even looking at the schools, most of the time is based off of race, in my view, because Rickards is the majority of the students are African-American. And at other schools, let's say Childs, majority of the students, I don't know, I don't go there, but from the outside looking in, they're not really African-American.
No.
And then going on the topic of stereotypes, I think like a lot of people make these impressions and get their insights about people based on the stereotype because they believe it to be true, because maybe they saw one case where it was true. And also, I think they use that as fuel for justification or excuses. For example, there's a stereotype that Asians are smart or like smarter, really good at math and such, which isn't really necessarily true. But I feel it's justification as maybe when someone who's not Asian fails a math test, but someone who is Asian passes it. He says, oh, he only passed because he's Asian. I'm not Asian. I'm at a disadvantage. I mean, it's like, no, he passed because he studied. Yeah. You didn't.
So you fail.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's, and that's the difference, right?
Yeah. I feel like the stereotypes come from people who feel inferior, like who feel less intelligent, less good at something, and they just have this strong superiority complex, and they just feel like they need to make up this bad rap so they can
feel good.
Yeah, right.
And what about good stereotypes? Like,
I mean, yeah, there is good stereotypes too, but.
Well, I mean, then that offers the argument, is any stereotype really a good stereotype? Because you think about it, and they're judging you. Even if technically a positive thing, they're still judging you.
It has a very negative connotation, for sure. I mean, we could look up the formal definition of stereotype and go based on that, but just based on how it's used in society, it's very negative.
Yeah, no matter what it is, it seems like it's always negative. I mean, even if you're saying Asians do real well in math. Well, what does that say?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, that's not real positive.
You're still making
so they can't do well in anything else?
Yeah. What I mean is...
And it's like if you're an Asian who's not into math and into music...
What's wrong with you?
Yeah.
Well, you know, that kind of thing.
But what I mean is, like, when you look at it, what's more offensive? Having your race being stereotyped as something terrible, like basically monsters, or something that can, in the end, help the world or something?
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah, I definitely get it.
Well, see, the thing with is being good at math may be a positive stereotype in a way, but I see it more as if you're not good at math, then people start judging, like, why aren't you good at math? You're a bad Asian. It's like, it's like, well, I'm just not as into math. I want to do other stuff. It's like, no, you're Asian. You have to be good at math. It kind of creates a standard that you have to live by, but you don't want to.
Mm. Yeah.
So, well, again, what we're talking about are these attitudes that people have formed about different groups, you know, and these different groups may be negative, it may not be positive, but where do you get these attitudes? Who are the most influential people in your lives that aid in forming, you know, contribute to you forming your opinions, forming your attitudes?
Well, the best thing I can think of is history is written by the victors. And so that's where a lot of it arrives from. I mean, with slavery and the South, white farmers felt the need to degrade slaves even more because they wanted to feel superior, this idea of Southern honor or whatever.
Yeah. Karina and I actually made eye contact on that. I think, well, you
philosophy.
Gonna say,
oh, yeah. Okay.
Well, I want to know what individuals are the most influential when it comes to forming your opinions or forming your attitudes. And what I'm going to ask you to do, though, is just to hold it for a minute because we're getting ready to take a break. And then when we come back, we'll deal with it. You're tuned in to 411 Teen, a conversational forum for teens and other interested folks. This hour, we're examining of stereotypes and first impressions and attitudes. We're going to take a brief break, but we'll return in 60 seconds. If you're just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen. I'm Dr. Liz Holyfield, and I'm talking with a dynamic group of students from the IB program at Rickards High School. Karina, you were getting ready to speak, and we were talking about the most influential individuals who help you form your attitudes, your opinions about life.
Well, I would mostly, you know, not necessarily want to say blame, but like, environment has an impact within itself, and other people's opinions can, you know, shape the way you think or your own philosophy of thinking. But I think where the foundation initially starts is, like, parental guidance.
Okay.
You know, so, like, how can I?
It starts in the home.
Yeah.
It does.
I mean, that's what you're saying. Mm-hmm. You know, it starts in the home, and I'm sure that there are others that feed into it. But it starts in the home. And you were going to say something, Shaquanda.
Oh, we had the same idea about it. But also with that, your friends can also influence. Mm-hmm. Because I've actually had people say, don't talk to that group of people. They're this or they're that. So
so that influences it, yes.
Karina was talking about the whole environment thing. And that actually goes back onto the debate of nature versus nurture. Mm-hmm. And I think that when parents, they play a really big role in your life, right?
They shape how you think. The way you think, the way you look at situations come from the lessons you learn from your parents. My mom has had such an influential role in my life. And any way I look at a situation, any way I handle some activity, and all, I always I believe that in myself that I think in the same way my mom would. And if my mom contradicts me in some way and all, I make sure to listen to that. And if she says, I would have done this instead, I firmly believe that that is a more, that may be a more logical way. So I feel parents can have a very influential role in your life, especially in the way you think.
Okay.
I think it's more than just parents, too, because I know this influenced me when I was younger. On my mom's side of the family, there's a lot of people that have some deep South ancestry. You know, and a particular uncle has a strong, strong bias against African Americans, specifically Barack Obama.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever we have the family gatherings, we do hear some rants about how Obama's ruining America, you know, stuff like that. But it's based solely in the fact that he's black, and that's, you know, that's not okay. But when I was younger, you know, some of these things kind of clicked in my head, and I went into elementary school. I was a little kid, and I was already had these, like, predispositions against black people. But then my first ever friend when I was a little kid, his name was Grant. He was a black guy, and I was like, oh, he's super nice. He's my best friend. And so,
did your uncle
then,
know about that?
No, did my uncle know? He never figured out. But, and I'm really glad that happened to me because that kind of took that prejudice away from me. And I feel like if I had never made friends with Grant, that maybe I would be racist.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. Really racist.
And but you're a cool guy.
What Yoon was saying, I have a little story too. In elementary school, I had a few friends, and they were white. And we went to the media center to check out some books. And I was like, oh, cool, this is a good book. Why don't you read it? And they're like, and then they flip through it, and they're like, no, thanks. And then I asked them, why not? And they're like, oh, it has some African-American characters in it. And I was like, oh, my gosh. Mm-hmm. And then I actually doubted my friendship with them after that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Another big influence is TV, actually, because... Mm.
That leads to... I was going to ask you about the media. Yeah. Media. You know, what role does the media play?
When I was younger, going back to the Asians, all they really showed on TV were Japanese, you know, Chinese. They didn't really focus on other Asian races.
Right.
And so even when they showed those people, they showed them as being smart or like CEOs, mm-hmm. people in charge of others. And I think actually Disney Channel was one of the first I know of to have a smart blonde and a dumb Asian.
Mm-hmm. And that just really leads right into what I was planning on asking you, and that's the role of the media. What role does the media play in perpetuating stereotypes? Because stereotypes often appear in the media, and they appear through the biases of the writers or the producers, the reporters, the editors, whatever. So do you think that the media creates or reinforces attitudes? And I think you've kind of touched on that, but I'd like to hear from the rest of you, what role does the media play? And, you know, newspapers, whether it's written media, whether it's something that's visual, we're looking at the internet, but what role, what message does that send to you?
I think when you're younger, you're much more likely to be influenced by it because, I mean, you're like a sponge. You take in everything and just say it without really thinking about it until someone tells you otherwise, such as your parents. But as you get older and you start to have your own opinions and all, you're less likely to listen to the media and more likely to dismiss views that conflict with yours, which can be good in some senses and bad in others. But I think it's if you're younger and you're into the media, then it's very likely you'll be influenced by it, okay. Whether that's positive or negative.
I think it also has a lot to do with, you know, how educated you are and how well you are at, you know, recognizing arguments. Because I've noticed that when people tend to be less educated, they tend to believe whatever they hear more often. And you have the news perpetuated with things like now. You have ISIS, the terrorist organization, and then previously you've had terrorist groups like Al-Qaeda. And overall, you notice this American sentiment rising of a racial stereotypes against people that are Islamic or Arabic.
Mm-hmm.
And the less educated people tend to be, the less they know about, you know, the Arabic people and the Islamic faith. And that the Islamic faith, you know, it's has no clauses in it that say things like what these terrorist organizations do are okay. Yeah. But if you didn't know any better, you'd be tempted to think that wasn't the truth, you know. You'd be tempted to hate Islamic people just because of what you saw in the news.
Yeah, I mean, these terrorist groups like Al-Qaeda are to Islam what the KKK is to Christianity.
Exactly.
This is isolated incidences that caused by extremists that don't necessarily say anything about the religion as a whole.
What about the more subtle suggestions? For example, let's take the Tallahassee Democrat.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Whenever you see somebody black on the front page of the Democrat, believe me, it's not for nothing good.
Hmm.
Think about it.
Yeah.
I mean, when you see a black face or brown face, as far as that's concerned, you know, is it positive? or is it negative? Yeah. What message does that send? If you get the paper all the time, or if you get whatever the publication may be, okay, and, you know, you read it on a regular basis, and you don't see anybody that looks like you, or when you do see people that look a particular way, it's always in the negative vein. What message does that send?
Well, it definitely sends a negative message. I mean, mm-hmm. whenever you're constantly seeing someone of the same race, for this example, black, seeing any race constantly on the front of a newspaper, breaking news on a news source, on TV for that matter, in this case, black, seeing what a negative context, like you'll often see a black person being persecuted for mm-hmm. a crime on the front of a newspaper, but you often don't see a positive story about a black person. And so the more you see it, you may not even think about it, but it's another one of those subconscious things. It's just slowly reinforcing your stereotype in your head that, you know, black people are always up to no good, mm-hmm. even though that's not the truth.
Mm-hmm. I think it's just the fact that a lot of people don't know the fact that correlation does not imply causation. Just because something happens right. over and over again doesn't mean that the fact behind it is true.
But you know? It sends a message. The whole media sends a message. If you demean, or if you always have something negative to say about any particular group.
Any group.
Any group. Don't have to be black. Like I said, you can put brown in there. Okay. All right. And it depends on the country. You know, maybe someplace else it'd be white.
Yeah.
You know, here we're talking about what's going on here in the United States.
Exactly.
I mean, basically.
Keep it in context.
Yeah. It has to be in context.
I think it also looks at the generation gap because when you look at KKK, the support group was much stronger back in the 1980s and 1990s, more than it is now. Mm-hmm. And you see less of its influence.
Yeah. Or, yes, I would agree with that. But, you know, I think that as far as organizations like the KKK, there are people that still believe in them. There are still people. Mm-hmm, but, you know, discrimination raises its ugly head all the time. But they might do it in a different way. Okay?
I feel like it's never going to stop, too. I feel like it's in the human...
It is.
Human experience that when you're afraid of someone or something like that, you will lash out. And that's what these organizations are there for. And I feel like that's never going to stop.
And you hit it. We talked about it a little earlier. Fear and ignorance. And that's the recipe for it. That's the recipe for the hate. That's the recipe for the prejudice. You look like you wanted to say something.
No.
Okay. All right. As I look at you all, it may not matter, but I always ask this question. How much interaction outside of school do you have with people who are different from you?
Actually, I do have a lot. Most of my friends from middle school and elementary school go to other schools.
Mm-hmm.
And so going to Rickards was kind of a new experience. I had to make all new friends. And it's actually been great because I realized I like Rickards more than I would have ever liked Leon and Lincoln, just meeting all these different cultures, experiencing all these different cultures. But outside of school, I do actually hang out with a lot of different groups and races. I think bigger than race is just the cultural background of a lot of people. Like in Tallahassee, you have people who are more city folk, for lack of a better word. You know, they're more attuned to the modern cities. They like, you know, going to electronic music concerts, stuff like that. And then you also have country people that are from, you know, the outskirts of Tallahassee, the less modernized parts. And so those are two major cultures in Tallahassee that may fit into the same race category, but are still different in a lot of ways.
Okay.
Well, being a Sikh, everyone is kind of different than me. But but to maybe be a bit broader, hanging out with non-Indians and all, I actually I do that a lot. I have friends at Childs who are white and Asian and all, and I have learned interacting with them to go beyond race because I realized that these are some of the best people I know, and it has nothing to do with their race.
So you've moved beyond that. That definitely is not
like,
a very
I would like to
thing.
Hope so.
Hope so. Okay. Karina, outside of school, how diverse is the group that you hang with?
I don't really go anywhere, to be honest. I don't.
Okay. Well, what about friends? You don't have any friends outside of school?
Not that I would like to label, no.
Oh, really? Okay. All right. Well, we'll accept that. We'll accept that. All right. Moving on. How about you?
When you mean outside of school, do you mean like maybe like school clubs?
You can include clubs. You can include clubs. But, you know, I want to take it out of the school arena because I know that the IB program is real diverse. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, yeah. So that's why I meant outside of that environment, outside of that milieu. How many by choice do you have?
Yeah, I'm actually a part of Key Club. And I think I've actually put in a lot of hours into some events. And I've attended some events that interacts with other people from schools. Mm-hmm. And we actually did a charity event last year with raising money. I don't remember what the charity was exactly, but I met a lot of great students from other schools, and I just got to know them a lot more, and it was nice.
Most of the people that I hang out with outside of school, I also hang with them in school.
Okay.
So
okay.
But if I had to say, I think my group of friends, like, we're really diverse. Like, none of us really come from the same background, you know. Mm-hmm. If we are the same race, we're, like, different sides of town, different experience. So when we do hang out outside of school, it's, like, it's a lot more fun because you're getting all these different personalities coming together, all these different cultures, and we actually... some of my friends, they share their cultures with us. Like, they may bring food that their mom prepared or something like that. So it's really, actually love hanging with people of different cultural backgrounds.
Did you have something? Yeah.
Yeah, I'm a part of the Mu Alpha Theta program at my school, mm-hmm. and that has a lot of competitions spread across Florida and in Alabama and sometimes other parts of the country for national levels. But through that, I've met a lot of great people, and there are a lot of diverse races. The guy I was talking about before, who was really good and is one of my best friends, he's white. He's not Asian at all. He's German, in fact, and I hang out with him a lot, and then I have friends of all different types of races, but it just comes down to the fact that we connect with the fact that we enjoy doing math, and we enjoy hanging mm-hmm. out with each other and seeing each other at competitions, and whenever there's a statewide competition, I look forward to seeing them.
Mm-hmm. So you have a common interest, and it has nothing to do with your racial background, your cultural background. It's that particular interest that you may have that you share.
Yeah, I'm not at a math competition like, oh, we're the Indians.
Right. Well, how do, in this last couple of minutes, I'd like us to explore this, how do we overcome, I guess, long-held attitudes, that individuals may have? How do we change them? You know, we talk about an attitude adjustment. How do we adjust these attitudes? What do we do? Where do we start, your opinion?
Oh, I feel like the trick would be, as far as concerning other people, like mm-hmm. you're trying to show other people that, you know, X race isn't what they seem, you'd have to put a strong message out there or a strong demonstration, you know, examples and stuff of, for example, let's go African-American people. You know, there's a stereotype that they're all criminals, and that's not true. But in order to prove this wrong, you'd have to probably have some sort of, you know, rally, Martin Luther King style. And you'd have to show the world that they're all, you know, they're just like you and me. You know, everyone's just like each other. And not everyone would believe it.
Right.
But I feel like it would change people's minds if they were to see just a large news story instead of a news story about something negative. Just a big news story about something positive.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I actually think it's already happening, like, as the generations keep coming, because things that are happening right now, probably years and years back, would have never even been
thought of. Give me an example. What do you mean?
Well, the main example that everyone would know is the black president thing. So
yeah, that's very true.
I don't really like to use that one, but it's the main one.
Why
that
not?
Because
like, I mean, it's
I really think it doesn't matter. Like, why should it matter what his race is? That's not necessarily his race, but what his skin color is.
Yeah, because regardless of whether he's mixed or not, when you look at President Obama, you see a black man.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay, now that's the reality. Okay, he may have had a white mother, but he, in this world, he's a black man. Mm-hmm. So, you know, to categorize him that way is okay.
And we think less and less about race and, yes, like, the school environment as the days go on.
That's
so
very true.
I mean, yeah, and I can see why you wouldn't want to use him as an example. But, I mean, I think the main idea behind it is that it shows progress. I mean, mm-hmm, hopefully next up will be a female president.
Yeah.
And from there, who knows what will happen.
Who knows what.
So.
And I want to say thank you. I mean, it's been great talking with all of you. You've got to come back to my listening audience. Tune in next week, same time, same place, to get the 411 on 411 Team. This edition of 411 Team was produced by Dr. Liz Hollyfield. Technical assistant, Ken Smith. Audio copies are available, and if you want to participate in 411 Team or have suggestions for discussion topics, call 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. If you would like to subscribe to 411 Team podcast, log in wfsu.org. Check us out on Facebook.